It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth and I'm going to host your show this morning. With me in the studio, joining me for the first time, maiden voyage, welcome Tom Dugard. Tom is a leadership consultant. He has his own company, the Affirmational Leadership Consulting. And good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Deborah.
And welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Joining us, we have two guests. Joining us by phone this morning is Kathy Lingle. Kathy is the executive director at World at Work's Alliance for Work-Life Progress. That's a mouthful. Good morning. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning. I'm glad to be here, Deborah. And hello, Tom.
Good morning.
Yeah, no, that's a mouthful, Kathy. Yes. World at Work's Alliance for Work-Life Progress. In a minute, or less than a minute, Kathy, we're going to have you tell us exactly who World at Work is and what is the Alliance for Work-Life Progress. That's just a mouthful. You can't really say that quickly. On the air. But I've renamed the show at the very last minute, which creates like a great deal of angst. This is our, for our listeners who listen regularly, you know, we bring in the experts. And I really do feel like this is one of those shows. And I love the topic. The topic is about leadership and building, you know, leadership in your organization. This is, you know, the fallout from the Great Recession, which people feel both in the federal system and out there in the corporate world. And so I've renamed the show Leadership in the 21st Century. How can you do it on a shoestring? What do you think, Kathy?
It is about new leadership, I think. The whole model of leadership is changing. And as far as shoestring, leadership really... it doesn't cost money. It doesn't have direct costs associated with it. It has to do with principles and attitude. So I think you're right on.
Yeah, except that you have to convey those principles and attitudes to people who are either current leaders or in the pipeline to become leaders. And hopefully this show is going to be a little sort of free, a little free and free informational. It's an informational In, what do they call it? They're, we're at like a free informational radio show this morning. And we're going to spend the next 50 minutes or so talking about where leadership is going in the 21st century and how can organizations both in the federal system and in corporate America bring their leaders there. But first, Tom, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into becoming a leadership consultant.
Thank you, Deborah. Yeah, it's been an incredible journey. For the last 30 years, I've been just completing a career with United Way, and I decided that there was a lot I wanted to continue doing relative to leadership skills and leadership skill understanding. Having worked with CEOs and the Fortune 500 companies and seeing what they do and seeing them sometimes struggle, even in the best of situations, for help and the loneliness that tends to exist at the leader level, always struck me as something that needed addressing. And I formed a company, and I called it Affirmational Leadership Consulting. By the way, affirmational is not a word. You'll get it underlined inside the spell check.
Is that why I had a hard time, I stumbled? Because it's not real?
Yeah, I actually have trademarked the word because I like it so much. But nonetheless, it's about a way of leading. It's about a whole philosophy. It's not just simply a model. It's not like certain models that you can look at and say, this is a leadership model. It's a philosophical approach to affirming the natural styles of leaders that reside within them, and also learning within the context of that for for leaders to affirm the styles of the people that they try to inspire. Leadership is a social exchange, and people don't understand the social context of leadership as much.
Yeah.
And therefore, they are sometimes challenged at understanding how to inspire the people that report to them, how to give them confidence, how to give them confidence in themselves, as well as in what they're trying to achieve. And so, therefore, the business affirmational leadership.
And of course, my view, which I think most people in America, most people in a capitalistic setting believe that if you you and your employees and the people you work with feel good about themselves and good about what they do and like it and feel engaged and part of it, productivity goes sky high.
It's shown. It's absolutely
it's the demoralized where it's really hard to get productive work. Kathy, well, you might not know this, but I had World at Work on the radio show, I think over a year ago. I don't think it was last year. 2011, but we had World at Work on, not you, but so we're really excited to have you on. And they, we did a show comparing federal employee benefits to the benefits to the private sector and where sort of the rift lines were and what should the feds do, because, you know, they were in the period of no pay raises, no bonuses. What could the feds do to sort of compete with corporate America, assuming corporate America takes off again? And I, the guy who was on the show, for our listeners, you can go back into the archives, he was just fascinating. He really had this stuff down. Now, you appear to be at a different part of World at Work. You're at Alliance for Work-Life Progress. I think our listeners would really benefit on knowing what is World at Work, who are all of you, and what exactly is your the Alliance for Work-Life Progress all about?
Well, World at Work is a professional association for human resource professionals, specialists, particularly in what we call total rewards, meaning the whole reward structure for employees, that which makes them feel like they're valued. That's everything from compensation and benefits, recognition, and in the last 10 years, which is where Alliance for Work-Life Progress comes into World at Work, what we call work-life effectiveness. And that whole package, we Alliance for Work-Life Progress, are the association within the association, whereas World at Work deals with the entire HR strategy. We focus on the work-life part, and that's all got to do with intrinsic motivators. Compensation and some of the other parts of rewards, of course, are extrinsic. So what Tom said about how people feel and how they get engaged, that's where the newer aspects of the HR proposition, such as work-life, are definitely coming into play.
I noticed that as soon as you said, you know, pay as a motivator is extrinsic and we're looking intrinsic, I immediately thought of what Tom was saying. You sort of, it's like one jewel with a series of facets, the way the two of you sort of see leading and motivating employees. Now, people can go to both of your websites, right? And Kathy's, yours is World at, you know, people just type it into their search engine. You're at World at Work. If they want to learn more about the Alliance for Work-Life Progress, they can certainly type that in. And Tom, you have your own website too.
Yes, it's affirmational.com.
So I thought that one of the more interesting ways, Kathy, to begin sort of our launch into this show, because our listeners are mostly federal employees and federal managers, supervisors, and executives. And, you know, the criticism in the federal system for decades has been that if you were really good technically at your job, that's how you got promoted into management. But it didn't necessarily mean you were a good, quote unquote, manager. When I was reading up for this show last night, I read something that clued me into this concept, which I have to say I hadn't thought about until I read it last night. What's the difference between managing people and leading people?
There is a lot of articles, essays, and opinions on this. Managing really has to do with more with logistics and getting things done. Leading is something that, as I think Tom put it, is about principles, philosophy, putting it out there what you want to have happen, and then the organization, through its managers and employees and working its way down the organization, make things happen at the other end.
Mm-hmm.
But what leadership does is set the context. It determines, in large part, the culture and creates the environment and gives the tools and resources that everyone needs in order to accomplish the organization's mission.
I think I'd rather be a leader than a manager.
Well, you know, Kathy's explanation is beautiful, but a lot of times I only have an elevator, two floors, time of space to answer that question. And somebody asking that, I just have to go, you know, with managing, it's about the what. Leading is about the how. And that difference suddenly resonates with them, because what a leader needs to do is, everybody has line of sight on the what. Everybody knows that either it's a service or provision of a particular aspect of government or a product in the profit sector. Everybody gets a line of sight on that. But how they make that work, how they bring the chemistry together in the workplace, that's the critical aspect. And leaders need to have an understanding of the how, which, by the way, is no longer, or hasn't been for a long, long time, stagnant. It's a moving target.
And
so leading is a moving target constantly. In fact,
it's a factor of the evolving mm-hmm. workplace.
Exactly. And the ambiguities in the workplace have just become even more magnified. You know, news cycles now are measured in minutes instead of days. And just look at what happened recently within this whole issue in the Middle East relative to that YouTube video and what happened there. And you have to be very quick and agile to respond to those things. I know that Thursday morning was interesting in the Democratic caucus areas. It was everybody had to be very agile suddenly because the universe had changed on Wednesday night.
Right. And that really, it's partly managing, as Kathy was saying, you know, sort of the organizational managing work is, I sort of took my takeaway from Kathy was, it's great if you can organize it and you can, and sort of like the assembly line, if you know how to push it through an assembly line.
Mm-hmm.
Leading, I think what I'm hearing from the two of you is, well, how do you inspire people to push that product through or that service through top notch? And we're going to spend the next part of our show talking about what makes an effective leader in the 21st century. What are some of the dichotomies between the leadership gap in the federal system versus corporate America, and how do you close the gap?
Exactly.
Kathy, we hang in there with us. We need to take our first commercial break. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com. Then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth. I'm hosting your show this morning. We're focusing on leadership in the 21st century, particularly in the federal system. And we have two experts here with us today to help us think about leadership in the 21st century on a shoestring. We have Kathy Lingle, who's the executive director at World at Work's Alliance for Work-Life Progress. Kathy, you still with us?
I am right here.
Great. And we have with us also Tom Dugard, who is a leadership consultant. He has his own consulting group, Affirmational Leadership Consulting. So, Kathy, Tom and I, before the show, because we're together in the studio, we were both sort of interested in, and I know World at Work follows these surveys, the Partnership for Public Service, OPM survey on best places to work, where it sort of ranked where the best places are and what made people, what made agencies decline in best places to work, and then the sort of the gap between sort of employee engagement in the federal system versus corporate America. And that survey came out, what was it, earlier this year, Tom, right?
In the summer.
And so give me your thoughts on that, Tom, and then we're going to hear from Kathy.
Well, it had good news in it, and it had bad news in it. And the good news is there seems to be a continual improvement in the leadership qualities at both the senior and intermediate levels. When they started the surveys back in 2003, the results were on a 100 scale for the leaders at all categories. The rating was 49.1, which was, by the way, the lowest of measurable items on that Best Places to Work survey. As it turns out, this year it has grown almost by 10% over that time span, almost 9 years now. It's up to 54.9. There is a great gap inside it, though. The senior leaders scored far worse than intermediate leaders did in the scoring and comparison. And by the way, there was a great span of departments. Some departments scored very, very high in the 70s, and some were much worse. So it helps departments and leaders at both levels understand where they stand. It's a great tool.
One of the things that I noticed about something I read about the results of Best Places to Work was that moving you to the top, getting you to move to the top of the list,
yes,
on Best Places to Work was largely driven by how people viewed how well they were led.
Exactly. Exactly.
And not, by the way, that's not historic. By like how well they were paid, mm-hmm, how many days off they got, could they telework? It was how well they were led, which I think really shows you a lot about human nature.
It really speaks to the two forms of income that Kathy was talking about earlier. There is the financial income that you work for, but there's the psychic income that makes you work better. And if that psychic income isn't present in your place of work, you come and you only work with what you bring. You don't add more because of a good leader. And the good leader is able to take that individual and get them to perform even better than they think they can. And that's what the value of a good leader is.
And isn't it interesting? That's what people wanted. Kathy, what was your view on that survey, Best Places to Work?
Well, I want to back up a second because I
sure.
think part of what explains the variability of results, which, you know, with an organization as huge as the federal government, mm-hmm, just like any large corporation, you're going to have a variation. I want to make sure that people listening understand that when we're talking about leadership, we're not talking about people only at the top of the organization. Sometimes the presumption is that all leaders are at the top, and they might be mostly men.
Mm-hmm.
One of the shifts is that leadership is really something very personal, and you actually need leaders in an organization at all levels. And so when we were talking about the difference between leaders and
managers—
That's
very empowering, Kathy.
It is. When you made the comment, I'd rather be a leader than a manager, another— point I'd like to make is that no organization can function without both, that we're not making value judgments, that one's better than the other. They're different functions, and all of them are critical to success. So if we go to the survey, it's a very good thing that leadership overall is up 10%. It's not very good that senior leaders scored worse than mid-level.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that's totally surprising if you keep in context what I just said about how leadership and leaders aren't always at the top. And some of your agencies, I would predict, that are rising, mm-hmm, doing better, people feel they're better led, they may well have leadership permeated throughout the organization in a way that an organization that really runs on command and control with everybody giving orders from the top and calling that leadership, that feels different,
mm-hmm,
to go back to what Tom said, and comes out with people with a net result about whether they feel well-led or not, whatever that means to them.
Mm. Tom?
Well, it just she's right on target. The issues of empowerment were just in the report greatly. Also, fairness was huge in the report as the two most deficit-focused areas. And empowering your team to be able to lead and giving them the sense of authority without getting outside boundaries, but giving them the authority to take on tasks and responsibilities and see them through to completion seems to be one of the great issues that's bubbling inside the federal employee group. Fairness was another one. Mm-hmm. And what that all leads me to is a concept that many of the workplaces don't seem to have good understood group norms, that they're operating without any kind of roadmap within the context of what they're doing. And group norms, unlike policies and procedures and things like that, tend not to be written, tend not to be ensconced in some book someplace, but they
It's the culture of the workplace.
Exactly. It's a culture. And if the leadership has not taken that third leg of leadership and put his stamp on it and understands it, or she understands it, it's a very big deficit inside that workplace. It means people run into various aspects, conflict and others, without a roadmap. And without that roadmap, then suddenly they find themselves on quicksand in many cases. They need a roadmap for how they deal with what they do, and group norms is the key.
Mm-hmm. And of course, what Kathy's saying is that means leadership is at all levels in the organization. And I think, Kathy, you're going to agree with me, our view of, you know, leadership means you have a top job, the top people, is a bit dated and old fashioned. That the workplace has really evolved. I like to say that about my workplace and just lawyers and law firms. You know, if you look back in the 70s and the 80s, they were very hierarchical, and the lawyers ruled the roost, and the support staff were treated like crap. Am I allowed to say that on the air? And it was really, and people treated people that way, that there was a difference in terms of what you brought to the table if you were a lawyer versus if you were on the administrative staff. And the reality is today, what 20, 30 years later, just in law firm, the mm-hmm. law firm culture, like I sort of certainly want to hear, Kathy, you and Tom's view about what that means in the federal system, is that everybody is equally important. Imagine running a law firm and you don't have administrative support. You can't, you know, lawyers aren't good at filing paper, entering data, and everybody's important. And when everybody's important and feels important, you know, you start thinking about leadership very differently.
Yes, I am very interested to. I always look back at the history of leadership and management, if you will, because they are intertwined. Mm-hmm. We really, coming from the end of the 19th century, in the late 1800s, our whole way that we supervise, manage, and lead people was established, you know, when the Industrial Revolution really took hold.
Right, and assembly lines.
Assembly line and mm-hmm. Frederick Taylor and efficiency management, and you had people in high windows on the factory floor
watching
the people. You know, you had watchers watching the watchers.
Right, and people felt watched.
And then came several world wars in the early 20th century, and then we got layered onto that system a command and control military model, and that really, we're still shedding our skin like a snake from the overlay of all that, where really somebody was in charge physically at the top on a factory floor, and then psychically on top forever. And mm-hmm. then, you know, people were expected to obey. It was a manufacturing system with people with very little education. Mm-hmm. Well, none of those conditions apply anymore.
But our managing style...
Our managing style is stuck, mm-hmm. and therein lies the rub. But I would like to point out, within the federal government is actually leading the charge. Talk about leadership. The Army and Navy are changing dramatically. So if you need a bigger example, I don't know where you're going to find it. In 2010, my organization, Alliance for Work-Life Progress, gave what we call our Work-Life Innovative Excellence Award to a project within the U.S. Navy, huge cultural change initiative called Task Force Work-Life. In 2006, earlier than that, we gave our same Innovation Excellence Award to the U.S. Army for their soldier and family readiness system. Of course, what was happening, we were engaged in two wars. We had a huge turnover rate and morale problems and all kinds of things going on. And it's fascinating because out of that, the Army and Navy are really reconstructing themselves and the way they are dealing with these issues about your personal life, your professional life, how do you get people to sustain through the incredible period we've been through, mm-hmm. you know, deployment after deployment, stay intact, keep up your morale. Now, there's a work problem, an incentive issue that caps them all. But what's really striking is that while the wars were going on about 5 years ago, Admiral Michael Mullen, who is now retired, but he was the U.S. Navy former chairman, Joint Chief yeah. of Staff, he started appearing at all of our major work-life events talking about how important it was to create leaders who were able to deal with their personal issues under great stress, their family lives, which is incredibly important if you're in serving in the military or anywhere else, but that's an extreme example. And he has just been elected to the board of the Families and Work Institute, and as recently as 2 weeks ago, he and his wife were at the Work-Life Legacy Awards talking about how important it is to integrate the personal with the professional, even in the Army and the Navy.
And, you know, I just find that, I don't want to say it's shocking, because it shouldn't be. It's certainly, when you look at places in America that would have felt stressed, and the stress would affect employees' morale, and morale affects productivity and engagement. Clearly, I shouldn't be surprised, right? Because, you know, the men and women who fight these wars, they suffered greatly in the last 8 years. It really suffered. It became major morale problems. And it wasn't just the deployments. It No. was dealing with, losing friends, you know, in battle, and the injuries that the people came home with, and it went on for 8 years. So it shouldn't be surprising. But what I guess surprises me is that, when you think of organizations that are sort of very traditional, slow to change, command and control would be the military. And yet they embraced, figured out they needed to embrace a change.
What I think is very exciting about this, you've just hit on where I'm going with this thought and my hopes. The military, you know, in the 20th century really defined command and control.
Right.
What if we have a softer, gentler side of Army and Navy, and they begin calling the shots about integration? Aren't we possibly looking forward to a model that really shifts our paradigm and takes us to brand new places, even beyond what the corporate world can do? Because the corporate world is very, very fragmented. You're talking by company by company. Mm-hmm. We're talking about one of the largest employers across the entire nation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the executive branch, when we say federal employees, we're really talking about the executive branch of government and of the three branches of government, our little civic lessons for the day. And it is the largest single employer in the world. 1.9 million people go to work every day in the executive branch. Kathy, I'm really interested in taking that example and talking with you and Tom about drawing from that. What are those skills that you see being demonstrated by Army and Navy that are become transferable to other parts of the government and to corporate America to make good leaders? I'm really interested in hearing about that. But we do need to take our mid-show commercial break. So Kathy, hang in with us. We'll be back. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote
and be sure to request your special federal savings.
I'm Bill Bransford, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Fed Talk brings you inside information on hot topics in the federal community. From the halls of Congress to federal agencies, get the latest on the laws, regulations, and activities that directly impact federal employees. Tune into Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, as we bring in the experts to bring you inside the issues.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth. Joining me in the studio today to talk about leadership in the 21st century, how federal executives and managers can think about leading, particularly on a shoestring. With me is Tom Dugard from Affirmational Leadership Consulting. Kathy Lingle's with us. She's from World at Work. Kathy, you're still with us, right?
I am right here.
Great. So Kathy was telling us, Tom, before the break about the changes going on at Army and Navy, largely driven by the effects that their workforce was feeling from fighting the two wars. And so I left the before the commercial break saying, you know, what are those skills? What are those leadership skills that we sort of learned that came out of those examples? What are the leadership gaps, particularly in the federal system? And I think if we identify them, and then, Kathy, towards the end of the show, we can talk about giving advice to federal executives and managers about where and how to find the right tools to become better leaders. But what is it what makes a good leader? What are the skills, Tom, that you sort of take? That's the takeaway here.
You know, the most important skill, and it is so simple that a lot of people don't even believe that it's that easy. The greatest skill is openness to self-understanding and understanding of others. If a person understands themselves and gets themselves a perspective on who they are relative to strengths, relative to blind spots, it is that most difficult of things. Knowing yourself, Greek. It comes from Socrates. It comes from that basic understanding. Learning how to know yourself, know what you do under certain circumstances, knowing your tendencies. If you have that particular skill, you will be able to help and inspire others, because without it, you are probably lost to your own instincts.
You know, I read an article getting ready for the show, and it was a blogger who does coaching and advice like that. And he said that his advice to any person who moved into a leadership management position was to first take, you know, like the Briggs-Myers test or, you know, some of those other tests that sort of measured and defined and described your personality so you could know yourself. So I think that's very interesting you say that. You know, when we talk about sort of like concrete skills gaps, what I've read are, and I think that's what the Best Places for Work measured. It was the ability to lead others, the ability to manage and lead change, and then the ability to have a strategic plan, a strategic vision. You agree with that, Tom?
Absolutely. The only tool that we all carry into every situation that's going to be with us always is our own mind, our ability to take that mind and use it to any situation that comes forward. Right now, the federal employer leader is dealing with cost issues, wanting to be frugal as possible, and scrutiny like no other time in their history, or at least it feels that way.
It does feel that way.
And therefore, they are facing these headwinds, and these headwinds are difficult for them to then take and turn into an asset. But it can be. If they take that energy, what was it Franklin said, a kite flies highest against the wind? Well, it is that kind of attitude. Okay, I've got this circumstance. How do I make it work for me? I noticed at the recent element of training for federal employees that one of their most important messages was their cost containment. They even were telling that they were making people pay for the coffee. But that was about the scrutiny that they were facing at that moment, that they were dealing with that scrutiny. I hope that they spent as much time on the programming as they did explaining that they were not giving away free
coffee.
You
have to wonder if they're getting lost in that. There is so much scrutiny. Well, first of all, there's so much budgetary pressures. Congress hasn't passed a budget in 3 years. And so they're on CRs, and the CRs come very late in the game. It's very hard for these major organizations that are, you know, that mostly run programs to figure out how they're going to run a program if they're finding out their funding at the very last minute. So they have those budgetary constraints. And then there's then there's the issue of their pay hasn't been raised in several years, and it doesn't look like it's getting raised next year. So you have the sort of internal money issue that employees face, that I'm doing more work and I'm not getting ahead.
And in many cases, their cost of living is going up, so they actually feel like they're falling behind. But what a leader can do when he knows he or she has that kind of circumstance is to begin to enhance the psychic income side, because you know this income side is static or diminishing, and therefore all the more important that you begin to look at the work-life relationships that Kathy was talking about, that you begin not closing down those kind of reward structures that are recognition-based, that are about doing a good job, that you point to the strengths of people. Unfortunately, too many of our leaders today have come to their leadership role with a deficit-based model. That deficit-based model is find an error, find a problem, and eliminate it. That deficit-based model, unfortunately, in more psychic and cognitive understanding, actually programs the errors, because it's like thinking about black bears, or not thinking about black bears, if you will. Tell somebody not to think about black bears. It's not possible. And if you focus on what's going wrong, you actually bring attention to wrong action. The whole strengths movement right now.
You know, the federal government feels like that right now. It feels like there's a major shift in the workplace over the last few years where many people, not just leaders and managers, are really looking to find things that are wrong. Because the outside, looking in on them, is only looking for what they did wrong.
And therefore, you constantly feel like a target. And the tendency is to become insular and inwardly focused, right at the time when you need to be external and grabbing anything new that brings more reward, psychic income to you and your team. And it's very difficult when you feel like a target to advance forward.
Right. They feel they very much, the mindset of our society's become that there's something wrong with government, particularly for government workers.
I'm glad you brought that up. That is so much.
And how do you lead through that?
Well, you begin to change the equation. First of all, you start closest to yourself and move out. It's the best way to work any plan. And then you begin to bring pride back into the person that is in the government world, that is leading inside that government world. Bring honor and recognition. And by the way, the Chico Awards are an example of that and what's going on, and I applaud what OPM is doing there. But more needs to be done, and it needs to be done on the smallest and largest of scales.
Yeah. It's a real challenge. It's a real challenge because, like I said, it's the largest single employer in the world, 1.9 employees, and they're, you know, that you sort of feel, you can see the slow slide of morale. But Kathy, you know, we heard from Tom on his view of the leadership skills gap. I suspect you're probably going to be almost in the same place, but I'd certainly like to hear from World at Work on that.
I would add three skills to the mix. I think they reframe is probably another way of saying what Tom has said. And I'm borrowing now from the work of a foremost expert in the work-life domain, Stuart Friedman at Wharton, who actually has written a book and teaches a course in what's called total leadership, which is all about integrating your life with your work, and actually has a four-way win system that he teaches, where you focus on four things: work, home, community, and yourself. And I think that's part of the key of increasing your own confidence and morale, because work is a huge domain. I don't mean to underestimate it, but what he says is, and this certainly is where I come from, there's three skills. First is authenticity, which means be real. Live the same values at work that you do at home. Don't check your personal self and your values at the door.
That's what Tom's saying.
When you walk in, he's saying the same thing.
His number one thing was know yourself.
Know yourself.
And be true to yourself, which is one of my favorite Shakespeare lines. It's to be true to thyself.
And
there's a lot to be said about that.
And so if you're happy at home and things are going well there, you can translate that good feeling and some of those skills into the workplace. You don't have to be, if you separate the domains, in other words, you're going to have much more trouble than if you realize you're in a four-way situation and you're borrowing the good, the bad, and the ugly from all of them and keeping all those balls in the air, work, home, community, and yourself. The second skill is integrity, which means being whole and thinking in a very holistic way. We were talking about what makes a leader different than a manager.
Yes.
There's something about vision and seeing the larger picture, but integrity really means integration, where, you know, most of us are three different people. We are who we would like people to think we are. We are who we honestly believe we are.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the image we project to the outside world. A person with integrity is actually one thing, one projection, and what you see is what you get. Most people, all of us, for some phase of our lives, are split into at least those three portions. So a big struggle that a person who's a leader will engage in more than some other people is really achieving your integrity and being what you really are. The third one is be innovative. And this may be where we really have to inject some energy in the federal system. And that means applying creativity, not just yourself, but with your team, your colleagues, via experimentation to find new solutions. Yes, there's trouble, but what authority, empowerment do you have within the sphere of what you can control to change, to make the situation better?
Mm-hmm.
And we all have...
I think that's what Tom was saying, too, about inspiring them.
Exactly. A sphere of control is bigger than we think it is. It's not everything. But with you and the people who are within that sphere, get real about what you can do. You really can achieve a lot. And if that's going on in pockets and then larger divisions throughout the entire federal government, that's how things change.
So I wanted to spend the last segment of the show talking about some concrete advice that the two of you could dispense to those people who are listening or who are going to tune in later and download and listen to us not live, to deal, you know, in the federal system, Kathy, some concrete bits of advice that they can, without, you know, paying to go to a training, that they can take, a takeaway that they'll have about improving their leadership skills. And I hope, Kathy, you'll be with us and join us in a minute, but we do have to take the final show, the final break, commercial break of our show. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth, and I'm hosting a show today on leadership in the 21st century, focused mostly on the federal system and how to do it on a shoestring. We've had two experts with us on leadership. We have Kathy Lingle, who's an executive director at World at Work, and we have Tom Dugard, who's a leadership consultant. And we only have about 10 more minutes left on airtime. So before the break, Tom, you heard where I wanted to go. Pick it up from there.
Yes. What one aspect of leadership can a new leader really grab onto and go with? And I think that they must understand that they've been spending a lot of their career, a lot of their life at work, trying to attain a leadership role. Once they've attained it, they tend to think they've arrived, and sometimes they take on slightly an imperial air. That is the biggest
mistake. I think that's what Kathy called the command and control.
Oh, yes. And then they think, I've arrived. Where's my reward? When actually there's a greater responsibility there than a reward. They now have people looking to them to inspire them. And they must see that as a responsibility, not as a reward. By seeing it as a reward, they will probably make some mistakes because they'll use their leadership wrongly. Their real purpose of leadership at that moment is to turn from someone that's achieved because they've done well to somebody that's now going to give back. And it's got to be almost, and it's an overused term, but the concept of servant leader. And that servant leader is not to necessarily the external world. It's to those people that look to them. That's who they must really understand they serve.
Kind of like I work for them.
Yes, in a way they do, because they have to help them understand what's best about them, what they've got good, what they need to do better at. And they must do it in a constructive way, in positive affirmational language. If they do that, they're going to be surprised how much reward they get back. Their reward is going to be the followership or the dependency on them as a good leader.
And loyalty and engagement.
Oh, and then they get the best of rewards. Then more people actually want to be a part of who and their team.
Right.
And that's when they've really actualized as a leader.
Right. Kathy, your thoughts?
Some very practical things that anybody can do. First, conduct an internal audit within whatever your department, division, group is. What have you already got that's really working well? Could be policies, could be practices, could be something about the culture, something about the people. Think of that in the broadest sense, but actually do an audit, and that might involve going around and asking some people at its best, and then leverage that, advertise that, promote that. We are a great place because we accomplish our mission by, we are doing this, we're doing that, we have increased our scores by X percent, whatever it is, and our people feel a sense of accomplishment, and keep beating that drum. In other words, I think we all tend to beat ourselves up but not celebrate where we are, and everybody, there's a lot. We actually have a work-life network within the Metro DC area that meets quarterly, people from all sorts of agencies, and they're doing wonderful things. And the point of that is to pump everybody up.
And that's what Tom was saying before the break, Kathy, if you remember, he's saying that too much of leadership in our workplace today is about finding out what's wrong.
Yeah, you got to do leverage what's working. Think about the opposite, what's working. And on the segue to talking about having a network, get outside your own workplace once in a while. Poke your head up. If you don't have a budget for leadership development, look to professional associations. Take on volunteer opportunities that are going to develop your leadership skills and have a plan about that within your organization. We found, for example, we have a board of directors at AWLP, and federal employees, for whatever reason, feel they can't serve on our board of directors. The federal government needs to get over that, frankly.
Right.
You have to get out if you're going to know what's going on across the world in another organization.
You know, federal employees, I always say this, there's something, and it's about all these rules and regulations and culture that they feel, you know, sometimes you sort of feel like they're under a rock.
Yeah.
I like the poke your head out every once in a while.
Poke your head out. However that operationalizes for you, poke your head out. Ask questions, see what other people are doing, take on volunteer positions, advise, get on advisory councils. If you want to know what's going on in the world, don't ask me. Come serve on my board or go, you know, Tom came from United Way. There's all kinds of, and, you know, he developed into a leadership expert from that. Get out and do whatever you can do, whether that's community service, on advisory boards. So audit what you've got and accentuate the positive. Get out. Talk to other people. That'll always make you feel better. Come to our work-life network. That's right in your backyard.
Right.
There is training that can be one thing that is really emerging is the need for resilience training. Almost like in the military situation, I'm feeling that federal government employees in a less intense way, but in that direction, are under siege.
Yeah, that's what Tom was saying.
Siege. So use resilience techniques. Actually train, and I was just talking to one of the work-life consulting firms yesterday that teaches resilience. There are skills you can teach people to stay strong, take that next challenge, feel good. This can be taught. And then look for and advertise, feature really surprising mold-breaking practices and models. Let me surprise you once again. If you thought Admiral Mullen was a surprise, look to Urban Meyer. Go to sports. We don't think of sports as a family-friendly integrated system, do we? I mean, it's really all A-types like Urban Meyer. Well, Urban Meyer just went to Ohio State. I happen to be a Buckeye, so I'm biased. All of you Buckeyes out there, get to Urban Meyer and get him to speak about the whole transition he's doing in his life on the work-life
front. Okay, Kathy, that was unfair getting Ohio State into this thing.
He's shifting gears here.
Right, let me get Tom to respond to that, Kathy.
Well, Kathy's right on about that celebration
thing. Because we have 2 minutes.
Yeah, she's right on about that celebration thing, and that's a common ground. That's one of those places where the family and the work world can come into play, and that's what you look for, those common ground places where if somebody's getting an award or you bring the family into it so they get to experience that world with them. And you look for those kind of common ground elements all the time. But one of the things about celebration that a lot of people don't realize is that certain people tend to enjoy celebration more than others. It's actually a style trait. And some people will come to a celebration and want to leave the second they get there because they just want to get it over as fast as they can. That happens to be a style trait. And certain leaders have that style trait. And one of the reasons is they're always looking forward to next. When you have an awareness that you have that tendency, you go, now, wait a second, I need to be here this long so I can do these things while I'm there. And if they change that celebration event into that kind of a context, they'll enjoy it more. They'll actually reward the people there with their presence, and that's what their team needs. And celebration is a key part of it.
Yeah, now, we just have like 2 or 3 minutes left, Tom. And in our list of advice for tips on leading, one of the things that you have to do if you work in the federal system is lead through conflict.
Oh, yes. Conflict is one of the toughest things that people deal with. And by the way, style affects the way we respond to conflict. Certain people love to actually engage in conflict. They believe it's a way ideas are formed and they create synthesis. But most of the people do not like direct conflict. They tend to flee conflict. And when you have a leader that actually seeks conflict because he believes it resolves things, and the rest of the population...
Or it gets creative minds going.
Exactly. And it becomes almost philosophical for them. I think we should talk this out, and he brings people together, and then half of the other room is all trying to run out the door as fast as they can.
Right. Their eyes are welled up. They're ready to cry.
And most often, it's because they haven't created rules around conflict. And if they don't have rules around conflict, for instance, we never allow it to become personal, because certain people believe conflict does become personal naturally, and therefore they fear it. And so if you have a set of rules in your workplace about how we're going to deal with points we don't agree on, and people feel safe within those rules, suddenly conflict becomes constructive instead of destructive. And having that ability to build those rules isn't necessarily innate. You come with your own style structure, and a lot of times you impose your own style structure in what you do. And without the sharing of rules and different perspectives, it will not be as strong as it can be.
Yeah. That's very interesting. Good advice. Kathy, we have 1 minute.
I have one thing to say. I have one thing to say. This is October is National Work and Family Month.
Yes.
If you visit our website, we actually have 2 websites, www.awlp.org or worldatwork.org. You will find the tools to help you do what I'm talking about. There's an audit for
that's great.
Surveying your internal practices so you can do this. You can figure out what you should be celebrating. We have all sorts of ways to celebrate National Work and Family Month once you've got that information. And posters, everything you need to make sure October is the time every year when you just stop for a second as an organization or a team, take stock, audit of where you are on your progress as an organization, and raise the bar one notch higher. And we have all kinds of stuff out there to help you do that.
Kathy, thank you so much. Tom Dugard, thank you both so much for being on this show. Who knew that it was work-life celebration, whatever month, and that we would have a show? Who knew? Somebody might think that we actually planned it that way, but this was a happy coincidence. Thank you both for being on our show, and I hope both of you will join us again.
Thank you.
Thank you.